Good evening. My name's Julia Smith, and I get to put on events like this for the Sexuality Series here at Calvin College. If this is your first time at one of our events, then I'm really glad you came. Thank you. Tonight we're going to hear a talk called The Trafficker Within, What We Do and Who We Hurt When We Use Pornography. And before I get to introducing our speaker, Kristin Komanicki, I just wanted to make a few more announcements. So this is actually part one of a two-part thing. You don't have to go to both, but I would strongly encourage if you can come back tomorrow night. We will be in the chapel at 7 for part two of Kristin's talk, which is going to be called Sexual Justice, Why What We Do With Our Bodies Matters. On the way in, you should have been handed a couple of cards. One is the evaluation card that we always give out at events, and it's super helpful to get comments and get a sense of who you all are in the audience and if these events are answering questions that you have and that kind of thing. So please fill that out, and you can leave it in the basket as you leave. Then the other card is a question card, because after Kristin's main talk, we're going to have some Q&A. And at that point, my trusty assistant, Haley, Wave Haley, who is at the back there, will be coming around to collect any cards, and we'll feed them up here to Kristin to pick her brains. The next event that we have coming up on October 16 is called the Man Event. Yes, this is for men. Anybody who identifies as a man. And it's going to be a panel of a whole variety of different guys, some of whom you may know from Calvin in staff or faculty positions. And it's really a chance to think about men in relationships, so friendships, dating, marriage, and to ask anything. There are some other ways to be involved with the Sexuality Series that I really love to highlight for you. One is to be part of our team for actually brainstorming about events and giving feedback and that kind of thing. If you're at all interested in that, shoot me an email. And the other is that we want to run some book groups this year. On the slide when it comes around, there are four books up there, two of them about marriage and two about dialogue on sexual identity and LGBT issues. If you're at all interested in being a student book group leader for those books or another that you may have in mind, please email me or come see me in my office in Spoolhof, and I would love to provide you with a free book and get you going to launch a book group. We have resources here on campus for sexual assault prevention and for people involved in pornography who want to get out of that habit. Step one is our group for men who want to get out of using pornography, and Dan Vandersteen in the Bruni Counseling Center is the contact for that. We also have Amanda Wurst in the Counseling Center who does our Strides group. Now, this is a group for women who have a significant other in their life who is struggling with porn use. Amanda is also hoping to put together a group for women who are struggling with their own porn use. Amanda and Dan, would you mind standing and just let us see who you are? So if you need to talk to somebody after about either of those groups, then those are the folks to go to. And Amanda also heads up the sexual assault prevention team. I know we have some SAPT members here in the, are they green or blue shirts? It's kind of teal. Greeny, blue, teal. Okay. Do you want to stand up, SAPT folks? So these are other people who can be a great resource to you, and they'll be around afterwards if you want to talk about anything connected with sexual assault or sexual assault prevention. And finally, in campus ministries, our associate chaplain, Amina Bradford, has a group for women who want to talk in a confidential space about sexual brokenness, sexual healing, and wholeness. I don't see Amina here tonight, but she would love to hear from anybody that's interested in joining that group. You've probably noticed already on the advertising for this event that I did put a caution that this is mature content. It will be disturbing to some of us, hopefully to all of us, actually. But for those of us who have sexual assault in our past or have been damaged by pornography, either our own use or somebody else's, I just would like to say, be mindful of your triggers, and please do what you have to do tonight to take care of yourself. So, now I have the privilege of actually introducing Kristin Komarnicki. Kristin is with Evangelicals for Social Action, and she edits their magazine called Prism. We actually have several copies of it on the table at the back, along with other resources that you can pick up, and a sign-up sheet to get more stuff, cards about step one. So she speaks and writes extensively about sexuality topics, pornography, sex trafficking, and also a positive, God-honoring vision for sexuality. What is our sexuality created for, and what's the real goodness in it that we often see so distorted? In 2011, Kristin won an award given out by Christians for Biblical Equality. It's their MICA Award, which honors those who exhibit courage, creativity, and tenacity in opposing abuse and advancing justice for women and children in Christ's name. It's my great privilege to welcome to the stage Kristin Komarnicki.
Thank you. Is this on? Yeah? I'm not gonna make you, but it would make me so happy if all you people in the back would move forward so I could see your faces. That's up to you, but. So welcome, and thank you so much for having me here tonight. That is really making a bad noise, right? Zach? It's buzzing, no? Okay. Let's start with a word of prayer. Am I the only one who hears that? Is that better? Yes, okay, all right. Lord, please help me to speak the truth with love and without shame. Even as I present a scene of great darkness, may I keep before us all a vision of a God who loves us so much that he knit our bodies and souls together, gave us the beauty of sexual expression and spiritual intimacy. May I speak from a place of healing and not from a place of wounding. Protect our hearts, invigorate our spirits, and be with us in this room tonight. Amen. George Orwell said that in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. So we're going to do some revolution tonight. I have a lot of bad news tonight, but I also have some really good news because I'm going to be telling the truth. And we can always take comfort in remembering that the truth, no matter how ugly it is, will set us free. In Ephesians 5, it says, "You were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Live as children of light and find out what pleases the Lord. Have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them." Now listen to this. "For everything exposed by the light becomes visible, and everything that is illuminated becomes a light." Everything exposed by the light becomes visible, and everything that is illuminated becomes a light. So as Julia warned, we're going to be talking about some hard things, and those of us who have been traumatized by sexual abuse or violence of any kind will be particularly vulnerable to what is discussed today. I don't show pornographic images, which is new for me. I've toned down my presentation a little bit. But if you have to leave the room, feel free to do so. I won't be offended. And definitely arrange to debrief with someone afterwards, say friend or counselor, mentor. In fact, all of us, regardless of our exposure to pornography, have been traumatized by it, whether we realize it or not. We can't walk down the street or go through the checkout line at the grocery store or turn on the TV without being confronted by it. So we're going to take an honest look at what pornography is. I'd like to start by saying two very important things. Sex is not the enemy. Sexual desire is not the enemy. Our beautiful bodies are not the enemy. We are not fighting flesh and blood here, but powers and principalities, an enemy that wants to enslave us, own us, by breaking us and taking all that is good from the God-given good of our sexuality. Number two, men are not the enemy. Sometimes it can look like that, but I urge you all to remember that when any part of creation, male or female, adult or child, red, yellow, black, or brown, is broken, the whole is affected. An assault on manhood is an assault on womanhood, and vice versa. The human family is inextricably linked. So I'm going to move quickly tonight. We have a long way to travel from the brothels of Asia to the landscape of American pop culture. I'll be spending more time in some places than others, but we'll be moving steadily along a continuum in order to help us connect some important dots. And yet, in many ways, this trip is really no further than the distance between our heads and our hearts. I want to start with a definition of human trafficking, which will give us a framework to work with as we go. So sex trafficking, as defined by the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, is the recruitment, harboring, transportation, provision, or obtaining of a person for the purpose of a commercial sex act, which involves force, fraud, or coercion, or a person under the age of 18. Well, many people believe that prostitution is, in the U.S., is not trafficking, that it's a choice. If they see an American woman standing on a street corner, well, she's not from Romania, she's not from Nigeria, they surmise that she's there because she chooses to be. They may feel sorry for her, they may write her off as a drug addict or someone who made bad choices, but they're not comfortable calling her a trafficking victim. The ever-popular Pretty Woman, that movie, and TV shows like Two and a Half Men, and so much of our media have done much to obscure the ugly reality of prostitution. Because prostitution is something that happens right here, where the average age of a girl entering prostitution is 13. That's the same girl in every picture. Can you see that? She's 18 in every one of those pictures. Those are chronological arrest photos of an 18-year-old girl in Denver, Colorado, that the vice detective shared with me. What do you see? Just shout out. What do you see in those pictures? Anything? Hopelessness. Sadness. Anything else? Dissociation. I think I have a laser on here. No? Anyway, I was going to... What about her eyes? What do you see in her eyes? Okay, why would she have a black eye? Abuse from? Or? Okay. I think these are portraits of death in process. But you don't have to be a child to be trafficked. Same thing. Same woman. From start to finish. When these pictures are shown to judges, they can't believe the first picture. They never see the women when they look like this. When we show these pictures to everyday people like you and me, we're all shocked by the last picture. But by the time women get arrested, rearrested, and show up in front of a judge, they often look like this. In the book called Promiscuities, author Naomi Wolf quotes a formerly prostituted woman's response to movies like Pretty Woman. "Here is all I have to say about how they are glamorizing those images for girls who are just sucking it in. When men think a woman is a whore, it's open season on her. They can say anything to her they want, they can do anything they want, they can be as absolutely crass and vile and violent and cruel and uncaring as the darkest part of their personality wants to be. And it's okay. They don't have to afford the woman 1 ounce of respect for being a human being. She's not a human being. She's a thing." One more. "This is what happens when a human being is commodified. Do you know any cashiers or restaurant workers or dental hygienists or kindergarten teachers that look like this after 2 years on the job? Any secretaries or flight attendants or scientists? And yet the world at large insists on calling these women sex workers. The sex industry, when I talk about that, I always put little imaginary quotes around sex industry because it doesn't actually produce anything, it actually reduces. I'm talking about everything from trafficking, prostitution, stripping, pornography, it's the whole gamut. This is just a billboard that I photographed near the LA airport. Bare elegance, gentlemen's club, always hiring. What kind of business is always hiring? No experience needed. So what kind of girls is that going to attract? Just think about that. So prostitution is often called the world's oldest profession, but Norma Ramos has redubbed it the world's oldest oppression, which is a lot more accurate. Somebody put together a help wanted ad that it's what you would read if you were reading an accurate ad for the job of prostitute. "Women and girls, do you want this job? Are you tired of mindless, low-skilled, low-paying jobs? Would you like a career with flexible hours, working with people, offering a professional service? No experience required, no high school diploma needed, no minimum age requirement, on-the-job training provided. Special opportunities for poor women, single mothers, women of color. Women and girls applying for this position will provide the following services: being penetrated orally, anally, and vaginally with penises, fingers, fists, and objects." And I'll leave out the rest. But the last thing on the list is being photographed or filmed performing these acts. So if prostitution is getting paid to perform sex acts, pornography is simply prostitution that has been recorded. There's really very little difference. We call them porn actresses, but they have a lot more in common with prostituted people than with actresses. Poverty, history of childhood sexual abuse, drug use, addiction, STDs, depression. But what are we really seeing when we watch porn? Because they look like they're enjoying it, right? So we really don't have to look any further than the experts, people in the pornography industry. So a study published in 2012 of sexually transmitted diseases discovered that of 168 sex industry performers, a total of 96 infections were found. So we're talking about chlamydia, gonorrhea, herpes, which is non-curable. Porn is the only industry in California, says Michael Weinstein, president of the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, where employees are forced to expose themselves to dangerous diseases in order to work. Animals have more protection in the making of films than porn performers. You know those little, that little caveat that comes up, or warning that comes up at the end of films? No, animals were harmed in the making of this film. Pornography is about harming human beings. Porn performers also have a very high death rate, dying prematurely from HIV, suicide, drugs, murder, accidents, and medical illnesses at rates that approach those of prostituted women, who are 40 times more likely to be murdered than the general population. But like I said, you don't have to look at these studies. Those inside the industry will tell you themselves. So according to Sharon Mitchell, who's pictured there, founder and director of the Adult Industry Medical Healthcare Foundation, until it closed its doors in 2011, she says, "It's a high-risk industry. You think it's glamorous and everyone gets millions of dollars like Jenna Jameson? It's not as glamorous as that, and it's not a backdoor into show business, which of course many people believe it is. The work is very, very dangerous psychologically for most people. She started in porn as a performer. Many porn actresses, she continues, take drugs while shooting movies to leave them under enough anesthesia to feel they are not there. If there's a little haze on everything, then emotionally you can separate yourself a little better. Christian, who's a male performer still in the business, says, why is drug use so prevalent in our business? Well, remember that the business is populated largely with girls aged 18 to 21, and the majority of them are uneducated. Many haven't graduated from high school. Add to that the fact that they have come into the business because they have no money and are working at menial jobs like fast food places. Once they're in the business, they might be making $10,000 a month. That's actually not true anymore. It's a lot lower. And working 10 to 15 days a month. There are predators out there who can smell these girls and prey on them like sharks. Young, uneducated girls with lots of money, lots of free time, and very little supervision. This is a really bad equation, unless you're a drug dealer, of course. The LA porn industry is in crisis, largely due to pirated content and amateur porn free content. So fees for scenes, not surprisingly, have taken a hit. One retired performer said, some girls get $600 for a scene now, when a few years ago, it used to be up to $3,000. Here's another performer. Looking back on it, I was so miserable. How could I have let anyone talk me into saying what a good thing it was? Once you get into the industry and you're working to make a living and you don't see any way out, you put on this big show. You become Becca Bratt. That was her stage name. The hardest part of leaving the industry was finding Carly again, remembering who Carly was because I had been Becca for so long. Jersey Jackson, I'm just tired of the industry, the way that they treat you as though you're just a piece of meat. We don't have a mind, and our body is everybody's, and we have no soul. Guys punching you in the face, you have semen from many guys all over your face, in your eyes, it's never ending. There are doctors in the industry that you go to if you have a common cold, but they'll give you Vicodin, Viagra, anything you want, because all they care about is money. You are a number, you're bruised, you have black eyes, you're torn, you have insides your insides are coming out of you. The main thing going around now is crystal meth, cocaine, and heroin. You have to numb yourself to go on set. The more you work, the more you have to numb yourself. Now, some of these performers are retired now, but people can still access all the videos they made. Performers don't own any of the content. Can you imagine trying to make a new start in life with that past and leave your past behind you when you don't know if you walk down the street, if someone's just been watching you in a pornographic video? Many former porn stars continue to struggle with drug and alcohol addiction, even those that get out and find faith and a new life in the Lord. So, does this mean that every young woman or man who goes into porn is from a broken home or has been sexually abused or neglected as a child? Well, that was pretty much the case 10 years ago with performers. Now we see more and more young people going into it simply because porn is so normalized in our culture. Today, as one pedophile put it in an interview, the culture does the grooming. Donnie Pauling is now a Christian, former porn producer. He was a pastor's kid. He went into porn, and he describes the porn generation as people 30 and under, for whom porn is so normalized. These kids, he says, are easy for a predator like me to recruit when they reach legal age. And I did, a lot. I recruited over 500 brand new models who had never been seen before in the business. They were not broken people, not drug addicts like some people think they must be, at least not at the beginning. They were just college girls. When he started out, he got a lot of recognition, and most of it was positive. People were like, you're in the porn business? That's great. Because porn is cool in modern times. This is quoting him now again. Paris Hilton can make a video and become famous for it instead of scorned. Britney Spears goes out without her underwear on and everybody in the world hears about it. We glamorize this sort of thing. It was easy for me to recruit. I'd just bring them over to the house and they'd see this nice lifestyle that I had. I'd show them the Playboy Mansion. They'd start painting themselves into this life. We're all cool. We're all having a great time. Guys envy us. It was so easy for me to recruit. But then, describing the work of a porn performer, he says, She does whatever I ask. Now, this is in the past tense. He's just... Then she has to do more and do more and do more to keep getting that money. How is that not sex trafficking? Pauling adds, there's no difference between that and a pimp who tells a runaway girl who just got off a bus that he's her boyfriend and then sells her on the streets. It's exactly the same. What's appealing about a girl that's curled up in a fetal position in a corner sucking her thumb because her mind is so blown by what she's done to herself that she doesn't know how to handle it? That is what porn is. One of the few women who's actually made the crossover from porn star to real star is Jenna Jameson, although she's in terrible state right now. Sasha Gray is another one who, like her, is rising. She was in a mainstream film, The Girlfriend Experience by Steven Soderbergh. That is the exception to the rule. Most of the performers last a couple of years and then are cast aside and never heard from again. She is a good example of somebody who was abused early in life. Andrea Dworkin. Has anybody here heard of Andrea Dworkin in gender studies? She's amazing. She's a major hero. So write that down, Andrea Dworkin. Anyway, she called sexual abuse boot camp for prostitution because it remains the most effective way to pull young people into this sex industry. Trains you to see your body as a commodity and to dissociate. Jenna Jameson did the boot camp of sexual abuse. And she wrote this book called How to Make Love Like a Porn Star. So interesting. She calls it a cautionary tale, and it really is a cautionary tale. She doesn't pull any punches. And isn't it interesting that she's writing a book telling you how to make love like somebody who's pretending to enjoy themselves? It's interesting, right? You see the irony there? She was raped by a boyfriend's uncle. She was sexually assaulted in other ways as well. She turned. She applied to a job at a strip club when she was 16 and trying to get away from home, and she did not get hired because she had braces on her teeth. She went home that night, took a pair of pliers, removed her braces, went back the next day, and the guy hired her. So she was featured on Oprah Winfrey's show. Oprah does a lot of great things, but she has some childhood sexual abuse that I venture to think she has not properly dealt with. Because she touts porn as a way to spice up your love life. And she interviewed Jenna Jameson on her show. The website, Oprah's website, invites us to take a look inside the private life of former porn star Jenna Jameson, whose lucrative career in the porn industry has financed her lavish lifestyle. See her art collection, waterfront views, twin son's nursery, and more. And find out why she doesn't care what people think of her. Actually, they don't ever tell us why she doesn't care, only that she cares very much about what her sons will think of her one day.
To be a mother having to answer those questions. I don't know exactly what I'm going to say to my sons, but I do know that I want them to understand that their mother loves them. I don't worry about what people think. I worry about what my son thinks.
Isn't that weird to feature her like a celebrity and build up her lifestyle and act like... I mean, the next thing, if you watch that video, there's a click. Click here to see Jenna's videos and sex toys. There's so much doublespeak in this world and that it's really hard to see through, but it's really obvious when you start looking for it. At the Adult Video News Awards in 2008, she retired. She announced her retirement from the business, saying, "I'll never spread my legs for this industry again." And people booed. Can you imagine Meryl Streep, accepting like a Lifetime Achievement Award and people booing her and her saying she'd never act again? Last year at the Adult Video News Awards, there was a performer who was receiving award, and obviously riffing on Jenna Jameson's line, she said, "I'll never stop spreading my legs for this industry." And she probably thought she'd get a big cheer. There was some weak applause. We just see that performers endure horrific acts to be admired, loved, seen, and even that doesn't get them what they want. Jenna Jameson had a lot of power in the adult industry, and she controlled her own shoots in a way that almost no one can today. She built her own porn production company that she sold for millions to Playboy. She is a fascinating example of what's called internalizing the oppressor. Internalized oppression is a psychological, sociological term to describe the manner in which an oppressed group comes to use against itself the methods of the oppressor. So you might think of the black overseer on a slave labor plantation, or the trafficked person who eventually becomes a brothel owner. When you watch porn featuring performers like Jameson who have endured childhood sexual abuse and sexual assault, you're watching people relive their worst childhood nightmares. But this time, they're telling themselves that they're in control, not their abuser. They're making money. Essentially, they become their own pimps, pimping themselves out to the porn industry. I've watched dozens of interviews with porn performers, and they're heartbreaking. Many of them are like soft, vulnerable children. Like, I just want people to love me. I just want the attention that I crave. Some of them are completely without affect, like Sasha Gray. I don't know if you've ever heard her interviewed. Others talk very openly about their abuse. I was watching an interview with an African-American woman named Pinky, and the interviewer said, "So when was your first sexual experience?" And she cocks her head a little bit, and she says, "The first time I wanted it." Later in the interview, she talks very openly about how she was abused from the age of 3 by her stepfather. But when she was 13, she basically said, "I'm in control now." And she went out and had her first sexual experience that she was in control of. But she'd definitely been groomed up to that point. Okay, so porn has its victims, as we've seen, the porn performers, right? But who else are we hurting? What effect does porn have on the consumer? New York Magazine a couple of years ago ran a great article that featured portraits of men while they're using porn. And it's really interesting to look at their faces, and that's what this is from. So porn is such a powerful player because of four A's. It's anonymous, it's incredibly accessible, right? It's affordable, basically free, and it's addictive. Dr. Marianne Layden, who's the director of the Sexual Trauma and Psychopathology Program at University of Pennsylvania Center for Cognitive Therapy. That's a long title, wow. She says, "Porn is the most concerning thing to psychological health that I know of existing today. The internet is a perfect drug delivery system. If we want to have a whole generation of young addicts who will never have the drug out of their mind." We'll talk about it in a minute, but it uses the same neural pathways as cocaine and other drugs, but unlike cocaine, which you can get out of your system, you really can't get images out of your system. 10, 20 years later, you can still access images that are recorded in there. What about young people? Beban Kidron is a British filmmaker. She made a documentary that was released earlier this year called In Real Life. She asked a group of boys in London, "What's the best thing about the internet?" One of the boys, 15-year-old Ryan, answered her without hesitation, "Porn," he said. But then he said, "You try out a girl and get a perfect image of what you've watched on the internet. You want her to be exactly like the one you saw on the internet. I'm highly thankful for whoever made these websites and that they're free. But in other senses, it's ruined the whole sense of love. It hurts me because I find now it's so hard for me to actually find a connection to a girl." It's a 15-year-old boy who should be excited about going on his first date. And he's old and broken and hopeless about love. Okay, effects on adult males. And I apologize, this is a couple of clips from a documentary called A Drug Called Pornography. It's really good, it's got really good stuff in it, but it's about 10 years old or more, and stylistically, it's kind of poor quality. And the second clip I'll show you has some music behind it, which is irritating. But anyway, just try to, it's worth listening to, so.
Addiction.
I'm addicted to pornography.
Have you ever tried to quit looking?
I mean, I gotta see porn.
Sex miseducation.
Have you learned things about women by looking at porno?
Yeah, they're down for anything no matter what they say. No matter what they say, a girl is down to do it.
Desensitization.
I get less attached to her emotionally and more just down for physical sex.
Conditioning.
It's gotten me into different positions, it's gotten me into little role playing. Before I saw porn, I was just straight, just regular stuff, and then you get into some crazy stuff.
And acting out.
You ever gotten violent with it?
Yeah.
What were you doing?
Like, she would pretend like she's getting raped, and I'd pretend like I'm raping her. That's from porn.
Donnie Pauling, who we talked about earlier, the former porn producer, has this to say about desensitization. It was not at all the fantasy I always thought it would be. I was slowly becoming accustomed to things that used to repulse me. At the beginning of my career, I would go into conventions, they have these adults entertainment conventions, and see things that would just turn my stomach, but by the end of it, they were no big deal. So listen to this clip for what men learn about women from porn and how that might be carried over into acting out.
It teaches some weird type of shit you want to try out with your girl. You're like, hey, babe, you want to try this out?
You want to know how to treat a woman right, you got to take porn out of
it. About everything I know as far as sex goes, you know. You learn it all from pornography.
Basically, well, I learned everything about the women is from pornos.
It tells you what turns them on and what turns them off.
You know, you watch something like that and you sometimes you realize what girls really want.
What does it taught you about women?
That they're weak. They're lame.
I kind of think of them as objects because you see them on the screen getting...
They're lame.
You can learn that from pornography. You can see a few things on the screen. You might want to try.
You watch these things and you go, I want to do them. And you know what? Sometimes you can't do them and you can't deal with it. So you say, okay, I'm going to go do it and I'm going to do it my way.
Gil Dines, who's a media expert up at Willa College in Boston, who I did some training with, writes, our sons are not born Johns, pimps, batterers, and rapists, but they are socialized in this culture to become pimps and Johns and batterers and rapists. The key socializing agent today in this culture is pornography. It is the major form of sex education today. And I have to say that when I talk to colleges and I ask kids where they learned about sex, if their parents ever talked to them, these are Christian kids at Christian colleges. Maybe 1 in 20 says that their parents actually taught them about sex. The rest of it is pornography and their peers. Pornography teaches men what to do with prostituted women. Sex in pornography is prostitution sex, defined by the customer. The sex industry is about formulaic, generic, plasticized sex, the McDonald's of sex, the industrialization of sex. So porn is sold as a product that offers sexual freedom and agency, but it is in fact a narrowing down to a commodified core. So that same process of desensitization and addiction occurs with women. Estimates say that between 1 in 3 and 1 in 4 of the 40 million Americans who regularly visit porn sites are women. Sociologist Michael Kimmel in New York says, 20 years ago, my female students would say, ugh, that's disgusting, when I brought up the topic of pornography in class. The men would guiltily say, yeah, I've used it. Today, men are much more open about saying they use it all the time and do not feel any guilt. The women now resemble the old male attitude. They sheepishly admit to using it themselves. Psychotherapist from Britain says, women who become regular users can suffer depression and low self-esteem because it can be hard to reconcile their enjoyment of porn with their intellectual dislike of seeing women used as sex objects. Porn has an instant effect on the human body and mind and the psyche, even if you disapprove of what you are seeing. So many women may find that their body is saying yes, even though their mind may be saying no, and that can be very upsetting. What about relationships? Porn, as the meme says, might be cheaper than dating, but what is the higher cost that we pay if porn kills love? Chris, can you stand up and show your Porn Kills Love shirt? He is our representative tonight. I'm going to be showing a lot of memes from an organization called fightthenewdrug.org, and that's where Chris's shirt is from, and they are terrific. Youth-led movement to educate and empower young people to deal with this topic. So what does it do to our relationships? Ron, a 27-year-old architecture student, says, I really had to stop and think about it when my girlfriend asked me recently why she always has to be the one to initiate things. And she was right. I guess I've been fading from her. It's like all that time with these porn stars was subduing any physical desire for my girlfriend. And in some weird way, my emotional need for her too. 41-year-old lawyer Perry says, I used to race home to have sex with my wife. Now I leave work a half hour early so I can get home before she does and masturbate to porn. The central problem with pornography is that it divorces the sex act from relationship. One man said, I was just masturbating with my wife. All the while, I was thinking either about porn or trying to make her say things she didn't want to say. I was really just using her. She was like a masturbatory accessory. Porn use is a leading reason cited for divorce. Porn teaches us to objectify people and divide them into body parts. It trains us to view people, human beings, as a collection of body parts. There are porn sites where you can plug in what you want. I want long legs, I want small breasts, I want dark hair, I want this race. How does that prepare somebody to look for and recognize the qualities in a real woman that will make a good life partner? And what messages are the women absorbing? Mostly that you're not good enough. One woman said, I wanted to be the cool girlfriend, like, I'll be cool and watch porn with you. But there was something about him needing the objectification of another woman to turn him on. Then he could transfer that excitement to my body. I began feeling very insecure about my body image, and I had never been self-conscious before in my life. I started feeling like I was fat, like I wasn't sexy enough. One, I think, kind of surprising effect of the porn generation is the incredible jump in breast enhancements. So between 2000 and 2010, the American Society of Plastic Surgeons recorded a 39% jump in breast implants. Breast lifts went up 70%. There's also an increase in labia surgery as women exposed to pornography say, I want my vagina to look like that. I want a designer vagina. Just a couple of years ago in the US, vaginoplasty, I don't actually know how to pronounce that properly, the vaginoplasty industry was worth almost $7 million. Labiaplasty procedures increased by 44% between 2013 and 2014. And buttocks augmentation procedures went up 58%. You know, in Africa, we're trying to eradicate female genital mutilation. And here, we're operating on our genitals. Right? And the side effects, possible side effects of labioplasty are identical to the side effects of genital mutilation. Scarring, pain. So there's also physiological damage. The brain's wiring actually changes through exposure to porn. Recent behavioral addiction research suggests that the loss of libido and performance occur because heavy users are numbing their brain's normal response to pleasure. Years of overriding the natural limits of libido with intense stimulation desensitize the user's response to dopamine, which is the gotta-have-it hormone. It's the thing that makes us feel real jazzed, especially with sexual images. So what you have now is people who you can fast forward, you can switch, you can have three windows open at a time, you can have live chat, you can rewind to watch the hottest parts, and we're actually overloading our sensory systems, numbing, burning out our pleasure centers. I have to watch the time, so I'm going to skip a few things here. Okay. I mentioned fightthenewdrug.org. I think it's .org, though. I put .com at the bottom there. That's just about addiction. I'm going to skip that. Gary Wilson is a physiology professor who created the website Your Brain on Porn, which is also excellent, great resources, to provide a response to the growing demand for solid scientific information by heavy internet porn users who are experiencing perplexing, unexpected effects, like the need for harder, harsher, more violent material, difficulty concentrating, sexual performance problems. So what else goes into brain imprinting? Why is porn such an effective teacher? Well, pictures are compact carriers of meaning. Think of all the money that's spent on advertising just to give you an image that stays in your brain, right? Learning is deeper if we are rewarded for behavior, and porn is rewarding on that level. Learning is deeper if we have role models who are rewarded for behaviors. This increases permission-giving beliefs, which we're going to talk about in a minute. And learning is deeper in the presence of arousal. Then there's also the broader societal costs. As of June 2013, In the last 10 years, the National Center for Missing and Exploiting Children's Child Victim Identification Program had reviewed and analyzed more than 90 million child pornography images since the program was created in 2002. Child pornography is a multi-billion dollar criminal enterprise and is among the fastest growing businesses on the internet. The content is also following adult porn's trend of increasing violence, normalizing the consumption of young children's bodies. And when I say young, I mean young. If you don't believe me, I went to the Adult Video News. They list their top-selling titles, and I found these. Father's Lust, My Best Friend's Dad, It's Okay, She's My Stepdaughter, Family Affair, Use My Daughter, and Daddy's Whore. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children estimates that 20% of all internet porn involves children. And then there's the abuse with children being exposed to porn in people's homes. When porn use becomes so prevalent, children get exposed to it, or they find it and they pop it in. So kids are acting out in schoolyards, pornographic acts. And my friend is a pediatrician, and she's had more than once one of her young patients tell her that they were invited to a party, only to find out that they were the party. High school students. Gail Dine said, I interviewed a number of men in prison who had committed rape against children. All were habitual users of child pornography. What they said to me was they got bored with regular porn and wanted something fresh. They were horrified at the idea of sex with a prepubescent child initially, but within 6 months they had all raped a child. Now that's not to say that everybody who looks at child porn is going to rape a child, but it does show you that that was a common factor. Another consequence is the acceptance of rape as entertainment. I typed in rape porn this afternoon to Google search and got 45 million results in 0.29 seconds. A growing body of evidence indicates that high-frequency pornography use or consumption of violent pornography among boys and men intensifies attitudes supportive of sexual coercion and increases their likelihood of perpetrating assault. That makes it hard for all you SAPT people, right? A Newsweek published a study recently showing that men who buy sex, so these are people who are already going to prostitutes, they say they are eight times more likely to say that they would rape a woman if they could get away with it. Dr. Marianne Layden, who I quoted earlier, she said, I've been a psychotherapist for 25 years, specializing in the treatment of sexual violence victims and perpetrators and sex addicts. I spend all day, every day, talking to rapists, rape victims, pedophiles, incest survivors, sex addicts, pornography addicts, etc. After I had done this work for about 10 years, I had a sudden realization that I hadn't treated one case of sexual violence that did not involve pornography. You don't have to have a PhD in psychology to realize something's going on here. I talked recently to someone who deals with kids who abuse other kids sexually and who are abused, and pornography is involved in almost all of them. It also reinforces rape myths. So what are rape myths? They're myths that give permission to rape, that normalize rape. So here are a few scenarios from typical porn sites. I'm reading actual copy from a porn scenario. Lystra is a foreign exchange student who is homesick and wants to move back to Korea. But her professor, like all good professors, knows what's best for his students. So one rape myth is that women don't know their own minds. Men know better what women really want and need sexually. Here's another one. Katie is about to get for the first time. She was a bit reluctant, but afterwards she screamed with joy. Rape myth. A woman might not want it at first, but once she gets a taste of hot sex, she can't get enough. I'm going to skip the other scenarios. You get the point. But some other rape myths are women are sluts who get what they deserve. Women are sexually manipulative. And getting a woman drunk is a good way to get her in the mood. Again, top-selling titles, Gangbang of Bonnie Rotten, Dorm Invasion, Corrupt Schoolgirls, Bang Bus. Sometimes when I talk to college students, I wonder if the guys or the girls even know what rape is or what consent is. I worked with a sexual assault prevention campaign last year called pact5.org. You should look that up too. It's five schools that came together to deal with sexual assault prevention in their, on their campuses. And my research led me to some alarming attitudes about what people think rape is. One woman wrote, "When he had finished raping me, he went back to his dorm, but I remember him calling the next day to see how I was." Another woman said, "As I stumbled from his room that night after the rape, he insisted that he walk me to my car. Back then, I couldn't reconcile the disturbing irony that made him act concerned for my safety as I walked to the parking lot." So do people really understand what sexual assault is? And do women really understand what consent is? So many young people today get the bulk of their sex miseducation from internet pornography that it's important to look at the messages the industry is promoting. I'm going to skip that. Sex renders bad stuff invisible. So stuff that we would never tolerate in general conversation or, for example, like violence or racism. A few years ago, there was somebody in my neck of the woods out in Philadelphia that made a really awful slur against a girls' basketball team. He promptly lost his job, which he should have. It was about the African-American players. But in porn, this stuff is glamorized, accepted, and it just is invisible once sex. And if you protest, people say, "Oh, you're just a prude," right? Let's see, I'm on 31 here. So porn. Oh, and this is important. A Canadian researcher said that he had to cancel a pornography study because he couldn't find any adult men in their 20s who had never viewed sexually explicit material. The study indicated that single men spent about 40 minutes viewing porn three times a week, while men in committed relationships averaged 20-minute porn viewing sessions between 1.5 to 2 times a week. This lack of a control group creates a huge blind spot, right? As Gary Wilson points out, if all boys started smoking at age 10, we'd think that lung cancer in men was normal. Oops. I need to talk about the violence a little bit. So porn isn't so much about sex as it is about instant gratification, domination, and control. So, for example, one porn video boasts no holes barred, 100% rough, brutal blowjobs, sweet teens suffering from excruciating anal pain. You see, the emphasis is on pain, not pleasure for the man, but pain for the woman. A porn industry veteran said, "I'd like to show what I believe the men want to see, violence against women. I firmly believe that we serve a purpose by showing that. The most violent we can get is the end of every scene. Men get off behind that because they get even with the women they can't have." There are porn sites that the scenario is 8th Street Latinas. Find an undocumented immigrant, pretend you're going to help her with her paperwork, use her sexually, and then laugh and, of course, don't help her. There's another one called Pimp My Black Teen, where they go around finding women who are not dressed attractively enough. They find a girl in sweatsuits and they say, "She looked like she just got out of bed. We knew we could give her the makeover she was in need of. So we told her what we did." They did pimpovers, right? Like makeovers. "And she wasn't going to have it until we dropped down a cool grand, and that changed her mind." There's a rape myth in there. Does anybody hear it? She wasn't going to do it until they offered her money, so. The one message that is carried in all pornography all the time is this: she wants it. She wants to be beaten, forced, brutalized. She wants to be hurt. So what about the fallout from a world that is so taken with, or at the very least of, tolerant of pornography? Our culture is so pornified that it now requires tremendous effort to avoid pornography and no more effort than a click of a mouse to obtain it. So what's the trickle-down effect? So I'm sure everyone's heard Robin Thicke's Blurred Lines, right? It's like you can't not dance and sing along with that, right? I had to keep turning it off when I figured out what the lyrics were about, right? So here's some more of this doublespeak. Stupefying doublespeak. Robin Thicke explains that his song Blurred Lines is, quote, "saying that women and men are equals as animals, and in power. It doesn't matter if you're a good girl or a bad girl, you can still have a good time. Okay? Listen to the actual lyrics. I'll give you something big enough to tear your ass in two. I'm nothing like your last guy. He's too square for you. He don't smack that ass and pull your hair like that. Not many women can refuse this pimpin'. I know you want it. Does that jive with his definition of what he's saying? Then there's the runaway best-selling quote-unquote romance, 50 Shades of Grey, in which the male lead dictates in a written contract what his lover must eat and wear, when she must exercise, wax, sleep. The romantic figure, Christian Grey, portrays all the classic characteristics of a batterer. Gail Dines writes that there's a list of potentially dangerous signs to watch out for from boyfriends. But needless to say, Mr. Grey is the poster boy of the list, not only with his jealous, controlling, stalking, sexually sadistic behavior, but his hypersensitivity to what he perceives as any slight against him, his whirlwind romancing of a younger, less powerful woman, and his Jekyll and Hyde mood swings. Any one of these is potentially dangerous, but a man who exhibits them all is lethal. Yet he is billed as the sexiest thing around, and the film version is coming out on Valentine's Day. I'm sure it'll be a big hit. I'm sure millions and millions of people will go see it. So I ask, do you see any blurred lines here? Because the very week that Ariel Castro, did you hear about him? Him in Ohio, he was arrested. He had three women chained in his basement. The very week that he was on trial, I saw this poster on the side of a bus for Madonna's tour. All hail the queen. No more only queens are in positions of power, right? She's chained in a sexually provocative position. Ariel Castro was a porn addict who said that he was a sick man. He's dead now. He was found hung in his jail cell. Do you see any shades of gray here? So on the one hand, boys at the click of a mouse can see a website called She Is Wasted, inviting guys to get girls drunk so that they can have their way with them. And then in Steubenville, Ohio, we had these two young boys, Trent Mays and Malik Richmond, who were adjudicated delinquent beyond reasonable doubt, which is the juvenile equivalent of a guilty verdict. And they, Malik is out, but Trent is still serving time, I believe. And everybody's all up in arms. And it is, it's terrible, because a drunk girl was raped repeatedly. But when the boys are exposed to this kind of stuff, you really wonder where to point the finger. So let's look at just a few of the lies. I gotta stop here, don't I? You know what, I think I'll just skip through this. What, you wanted to be finished by now, right? What do you think, should I keep going or should I speed? Keep going? Okay. So I'll just try to go quickly, but some of the lies that a pornified culture sells us. So the message for women is that sexual availability is sexual empowerment. Guys are told that sexual entitlement is sexual freedom. And we're all told that sex is all about violence and domination. So for example, here's a perfect example. We have Rihanna and we have Miley Cyrus, right? They both sing about stripping. They both speak against the so-called haters. They're claiming this right to objectify themselves, to strip. But look at these magazine covers. Who has the power here? Now these are powerful women, right? Keira Knightley, Scarlett Johansson, Jennifer Aniston. They're all naked. Brad Pitt and George Clooney are not stripped. They're in their power suits, right? But our culture tells women that to strip is a sign of power. Since when has being stripped been considered a sign of power? And I don't care if it's a female officer in Abu Ghraib prison stripping and humiliating prisoners, or this is a picture of a woman in Corsica who was accused of collaborating with the German occupiers. It has always been a traditional form of humiliation and control. So that's one lie. And then, of course, there's the self-objectification. Miley Cyrus said, I don't ever really plan to offend people, but sometimes that just happens because people aren't open to what they don't understand. That's why what I'm doing is for my fans, because my fans are all really young, so they understand what I'm doing. They get it. This is a t-shirt I saw in a shop recently. What's it called when you trade your affections for goods or money? So men are told that sexual entitlement equals sexual freedom. But if you know anything about Hugh Hefner's life, there's nothing free about it. He can't even make love to a woman. He has to, the only way he can have an orgasm is in the presence of pornography and being manipulated by one of his four girlfriends at any one time. That's not freedom. James Bond, who is the, you know, paragon of sexual freedom, sexual entitlement, I just thought it was interesting that he actually has sex with a trafficking victim in his last movie, which did catch the attention of a few people. Then you have games like Grand Theft Auto, where you actually get health points or greater life points if you hire a prostitute. After you hire her, you can kill her and take the money back. That's actually encouraged, and there are YouTube videos telling you, explaining exactly how you can do that. Family Guy thought it would be fun to parody that, so they did. So the message sent to guys is that sex is not about intimacy, caring, love, or respect, not about marriage or children, but it's recreation. Sex with strangers is the best and most intense kind of sex, and sex has no negatives like STDs, unwanted pregnancies, psychological or moral impacts, to name just a few. Does that sound like freedom to you? But it's just fantasy, right? Porn is just fantasy. Sexual fantasy is rehearsal for relationships. If you image others as mere instruments of your gratification, you are literally rehearsing exploitative patterns of behavior towards others. The more you picture yourself either using others or being used, the more such encounters will feel familiar and normal. So boys are vulnerable as victims, as we've seen, Jerry Sandusky, the church scandals, sex abuse scandals. But for the most part, boys are groomed at the cultural level to be users, takers, and pornography makers. Look at that's a Kodak ad saying, what you do with it is up to you. I'm gonna take a picture of a girl's skirt, right? That's up to you. This is a Mitchum ad. If you convinced her, i.e., if you lied to her that you weren't gonna share these pictures of her with others, then you're a Mitchum man. Girls, on the other hand, are taught that their sexual attractiveness and availability are the most important things about them. And they're taught to seek male attention and approval at all costs. This magazine cover is just amazing. Look at the pressure on females. Make him want to be your boyfriend. Her responsibility. 885 ways to look hot. I mean, I could probably think of 20, but 885, really? Get noticed at parties. Here's how. And then, the great irony of Christina Aguilera, I used music to escape the abuse. So my questions to you are, if we objectify and consume others, or ourselves, regardless of the physical, psychological, and spiritual costs, are we not Johns? If we buy into the lie that sex is a product, and we traffic in those lies, participating in an industry that fuels demand for more bodies and a taste for more and more extreme and degrading acts, are we not pimps? And if we give ourselves over to the deception and enslavement of pornography, are we not trafficking even our own hearts and minds to the great slave master? We can easily feel paralyzed by the size, scope, and depth of the problem. So it can help to remember what we're really looking for when we use porn, what we're really after. At the core, and I'm going to talk about this tomorrow, so I hope you guys come tomorrow night. That's the good side of things. What we're really after at our core is, at the core, our sexual curiosity and how our bodies are wired for desire are what lead us to porn. But if we stay in it, we're lost. I watched a porn scene. You know, every once in a while when I'm preparing these talks, I hear the devil's voice, literally, saying things like, oh, it's not as bad as you think. People don't want to hear this. Who do you think you are? I recognize the voice. So that time, I thought, well, maybe I am making too much of this. So I clicked on a porn scene. It was one woman, five guys. I'll just summarize. It was pathetic. Like, even the violence was half-hearted. I felt like I was looking at, you know when you take a picture of something good and then you photocopy it again, and you photocopy the photocopy, you photocopy the... It was just so far removed from what sex was made to be. There was no beauty in it at all. And I felt empty and dismayed. And I was like, oh yeah, it is as bad as I remembered. In the book Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis, which is great, if you haven't read it, I highly recommend that too, the older devil scolds the younger devil for having allowed his human to experience the joy of taking a walk in nature and reading a good book. He says, oh, how could you do this? You allowed him two real positive pleasures. Were you so ignorant as not to see the danger of this? The characteristic of pains and pleasures is that they are unmistakably real and therefore give the person who feels them a touchstone of reality. Instead, you must try to damn your human by palming off vanity, bustle, irony, pornography I'd add in there, as pleasures. How can you have failed to see that a real pleasure was the very last thing you ought to have let him meet? Can we use the very real pain of what porn does to our hearts and to others as a way to connect with our very real God? Can we use our yearning for real pleasure and intimacy and connection as a way to connect with our real God and others? So what do we do? I just want to end with a couple of suggestions. And these are all these memes which you can download from fightthenewdrug.org, and they're great. So first, understand the source and the true object of your desires. You're not a bad person for looking at porn. It'll hurt you, but the desires are there, placed there by God. Educate yourself. You're here tonight. You're learning a lot. Educate yourself. See the problem. Have the courage to face it head on. Educate others about the very real costs of porn. Tell your friends. Seek help for your porn habit. This is really important. Telling someone, whether you're using it or making it or being hurt by someone who is, we need to talk about this and not cower in the corner, capitulate, or minimize. It's adultery. It's addictive. It destroys lives. It hurts. Let's tell the truth and start by telling ourselves the truth first. Because it is for freedom that we have been set free, right? When a church encourages, or a college, encourages conversation about sexual addiction and allows the gospel to be applied to it, it is enormously powerful. In churches that allow for people who are sexually addicted to speak openly about it, you'll see deep levels of transformation and the gospel taking root. That's from a book called Surfing for God. Offer help rather than shame to someone who's struggling. Be kind. Invite. Don't shame. Say no to shame, lies, and enslavement. Say yes to vulnerability, reality, and freedom. When I say vulnerability, I mean just be honest, right? Sometimes we feel like we're going to die if we tell the truth. You know what? Our pride dies, but we survive. We are only as sick as our secrets. Get mad. You've been lied to. You know, the corporate pimps are out there. They just want their hands deep in your pocket. They want to take your sexuality, which is God-given human right, break it all up and hand it back to you, and then own you for the rest of your life. Doesn't that make you mad? Don't young people like to rebel? This is a good time to rebel. That's what I tell my boys. Let's rebel. And importantly, become an activist. Speak out, like our friend Chris here. Don't wait until you're clean to start fighting. Fighting is part of the healing process. Don't believe that lie, oh, I'm not good enough, I can't do this, I look at porn sometimes, I can't. No, just start fighting now. There's one-stop shopping is this antipornography.org site. They've got tons of resources, and fightthenewdrug.org. Get connected, give to, and join forces with others. You can't do this alone. And remember that porn is the most accessible part of the fight against human trafficking. Start addressing it today. Thank you. Sorry for the rush job. Is this, let me, I mean, I can ask a question if you don't have one for me yet. Are you guys talking about this in your dorms with your friends? No. Why do you think that is?
We like to hide it in the dark corner.
Okay. Yes.
I didn't hear a response, but there has been some talk on this for sure, especially this year, for the freshmen with Step Up Drama. There was out of testimony with people, there were two of them in the team that stepped up and testified that they had been struggling to watch their own respect. So it is becoming a bigger discussion on campus, especially this year.
How were the people that came forward treated when they came forward?
They were accepted. It wasn't like a judgmental thing. It just was shocked that female stepped up too. We don't hear that a lot. But also encouraging me to see like, okay, like it's out of the now, like we can really talk about this.
You know, it often takes
right.
Pray for those people that stepped forward, because that was very brave of them, and pray that the floodgates open, because that you know, that's they did a great service to the campus. Yeah. Good to think about safe ways to open those spaces. I think the smaller the group, the better, you know, 5 or 6 people can be good. But, you know, it's weird because it's just so incredibly common. But you're like, you know, everybody pretends it's not an issue, but it's just so incredibly common that, I do have some questions here. Is written porn or literary erotica equally as addictive, and does it have the same effects? Well, I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist. That's a hard one. Literary porn. I would put it in the same category. I mean, I just barely made it through Shades of Grey, and I don't know how you guys are affected by stuff, but I literally started some self-harming behavior by the time I was finished with that book. I mean, it was so distressing to me. And you know that... I went out and bought a pack of cigarettes is what I did. I went to the park and like, but I was very, very disturbed. It was sort of like what I talked about, how, you know, you can be revolted by something, but your body kicks in. So, you know, I'm sexually stimulated by what I'm reading and I'm absolutely repulsed. And that is troubling. And, you know, I had it in my mind, like, okay, I have to read this because I've been asked to give a presentation on it. I need to know, this is my field of research. And yet, it was just awful to me. So I think that written, whether it's written or, I mean, take romance novels. Are they bad for us? You know? Are they telling the truth? I guess that's what I would ask. Is the piece of literature that you're reading, is it telling the truth about relationships? Or is it just divorcing sex from relationships? I would say that's a good like litmus test for me anyway. Does it have the same effects? I think anything that is really rewarding becomes addictive, and who wants to be addicted to anything, you know? So I don't know. That's not a great answer, but that's what I have right now. What about men in porn as victims and submissives? Does it all work the same way, and what are the statistics? Okay, I don't know the statistics, but there is a lot of violent male-on-male porn, and there is dominatrix porn where men are submissive. My quick and easy answer is that it's bad to commodify something that is meant to be a private spiritual experience. So anybody in porn is objectifying themselves and being objectified. I read one little testimonial from an African-American male performer who said, he says, it's just like the slave trade, like I'm on the block, you know? I'm just being bought and sold for my body. It was interesting because with the racial dynamic there, he had sort of that in the historical, he had a little bit of more perspective, but you know, the men are paid a fraction of what the girls are because there's no shortage apparently of men who want to get into it, but it's the same unhealthy lifestyle, so I don't know if it all works the same way. I mean, I think men and women do have different reactions, but abusing yourself and others is bad for you. You know, people talk about animal rights, you know, oh, well, people are more important than animals. But if you had to work at a factory farm where your job was whacking birds all day or branding animals or chopping off their beaks, what effect would that have on you? So to be a man in porn, what effect does it have on you to every day your job is to go out and hurt women? So I would say that across the board, I'm anti-porn. I'm an anti-porn star, as you saw on my shirt. Dare you? Oh, are you encouraged that freshmen at Calvin College are part of a maternal? No, that can't be right. I'm sorry. I don't know. I should get my reading glasses back on. Can you read that? Material?
Oh, national movement.
Oh, national.
To prevent sexual abuse.
Okay.
We are now required to complete a roughly 1-hour online course which trains us to recognize and prevent bystander situations where sexual abuse, stalkers, and sexual assault are involved.
And is that enough to cause real change?
Right.
Yes, I'm encouraged. I love that you have a sexual assault prevention team right here. That is awesome. You know, so many of these things, like, if you just start talking about them, it's so much easier to connect the dots. When you're alone in your little room, your little cubbyhole, whatever, you can feel overwhelmed by messages. We need to help each other out. So sometimes just basic education, or even saying, like, what I was doing with the songs, like, hey, wait a minute, he's saying this, but it's really this. Do we help each other interpret the world around us? Do we speak out? We talked about this earlier. In another group, do we speak out when somebody, when the guys are in the locker room and they're saying, ha ha, making some comment about a girl, do we say, you know what, she's a human being, she's not just a set of breasts, like, would you talk that way about your sister, or, you know, do we have the courage to step up, do we have basic humanity on our sleeve? And sometimes a 1-hour course that sensitizes you to things you didn't think about before, it's awesome, yes. I mean, they didn't have that when I was in college 30 years ago. So, were there any more there? Okay. I'm encouraged, really encouraged. You know, the tipping point, we're so far past the tipping point with pornography in our culture, but the good that I see coming out of it is that there's this youth-led movement, like these groups like Fight the New Drug. That is so empowering to see people. Because really, at the end of the day, you're like, why should I just turn over my sexuality, like I was saying earlier, to the corporate pimps? This is my life. This is my body. These are my relationships, my future, my marriage that I'm talking about. Why should I let anybody else dictate? And I love that. When young people get feisty and they say, I'm going to take this back, then things happen. And there's so much scientific evidence now for everything I was saying today that it's not just, you know, nice Christians saying, don't look at porn. It's a human problem, and there's pretty much across the board recognition of that. I mean, I just quoted people in the porn industry, and, you know, they're saying it themselves. Of course, they defend the right. They say it's freedom of speech. But the problem with the freedom of speech argument is that when somebody's freedom to do X affects my freedom to walk down the street and feel safe, go to the grocery store and not be accosted by images that are upsetting with my children there. You know, one person's freedom affects another person's freedom, and we need to take that seriously. Anybody else? Thank you for coming. Was any of this new to you? The framework? Yeah? Good. That makes me happy. Do you think that you are going to use it to spark some conversations with your friends? Awesome. There's a clipboard at the back of the room. If you give me your email address, I will email you a 2-page PDF that has all the live links in it for the resources. And if you want, put a star or some indicate some way, and I will send you a copy of the PowerPoint as well, if that's helpful. Just to, if you want to talk through it with your friends or whatever. Okay? You're welcome.